Tonight on Radio Stage, the concluding episode of Within the Hollow Crown, a sad story of the death of kings. A radio adaptation of William Shakespeare's Richard II and Henry IV, parts 1 and 2.
No, how? What time of day is it, lad?
What a devil hast thou to do with the time of the day? Thou art so fat-witted with drinking of old sack and unbuttoning thee after supper, and sleeping upon benches after noon, that thou hast forgotten to demand that which thou wouldst truly know. Unless hours were cups of sack, and minutes capons, and clocks the tongues of bogs, and dials the signs of leaping houses, and the blessed sun himself a fair hot wench in flame-colored taffeta, I see no reason why thou shouldst be so superfluous to demand the time of the day.
Indeed, you come near me now, Hal. For we that take purses go by the moon and the seven stars, and not by Phoebus, he that wandering knight so fair. And I prithee, sweet wag, when thou art king, as God save thy grace, or majesty, I should say, for grace thou wilt have none.
What, none?
No, by my troth, not so much as will serve to be prologue to an egg and butter.
Well, how then? Come, roundly, roundly.
Merry then, sweet wag. When thou art king, let not us that are squires of the night's body be called thieves of the day's beauty. Let us be Diana's foresters, gentlemen of the shade, minions of the moon, and let men say we be men of good government, being governed as the sea is, by our noble and chaste mistress the moon, under whose countenance we steal.
Thou sayest well, and it holds well too. For the fortune of us that are the moon's men doth ebb and flow like the sea, being governed as the sea is by the moon. As for proof, now, a purse of gold most resolutely snatched on Monday night and most dissolutely spent on Tuesday morning, got with swearing lay by and spent with crying bring in, now in as low an ebb as the foot of the ladder and by in as high a flow as the ridge of the gallows.
What? I prithee, sweet wag, shall there be gallows standing in England when thou art king? Do not thou, when thou art king, hang a thief.
No, thou shalt.
Shall I? Oh, rare. By the Lord, I'll be a brave judge.
Thou judgest false already. I mean, thou shalt have the hanging of the thieves and so become a rare hangman.
Well, how well. And in some sort it jumps with my humor as well as waiting in the court, I can tell you.
For obtaining of suits?
Yeah, for obtaining of suits, whereof the hangman hath no lean wardrobe. Thou hast done much harm upon me, Hal. God forgive thee for it. Before I knew thee, Hal, I knew nothing. And now I am, if a man should speak truly, little better than one of the wicked. I must give over this life, and I will give it over. By the Lord, and I do not, I am a villain. I'll be damned for never a king's son in Christendom.
Where shall we take a purse tomorrow, Jack?
Zounds, where thou wilt, lad. I'll make one. And do I not, call me villain and baffle me.
I see a good amendment of life in thee, from praying to purse-taking.
Why, Hal, 'tis my vocation, Hal. 'Tis no sin for a man to labor in his vocation.
About to speak?
Yea, my good lord.
Those prisoners in your highness' name demanded, which Harry Percy here at Holmedon took, where, as he says, not with such strength denied as is delivered to your majesty. Either envy, therefore, or misprision is guilty of this fault, and not my son.
My liege, I did deny no prisoners. But I remember when the fight was done, when I was dry with rage and extreme toil, came there a certain lord, neat and trimly dressed. He was perfumed like a milliner, and twixt his finger and his thumb he held a poncet box, which ever and anon he gave his nose and took tway again. And as the soldiers bore dead bodies by, he called them untaught knaves, unmannerly, to bring a slovenly, unhandsome corpse betwixt the wind and his nobility. With many holiday and lady terms he questioned me, amongst the rest demanded my prisoners in your majesty's behalf. I then, all smarting with my wounds being cold, answered neglectingly I know not what he should or he should not, for he made me mad to see him shine so brisk and smell so sweet, and talk so like a waiting gentlewoman.
The circumstances considered, good my lord,
Whate'er Lord Harry Percy then had said, to such a person and in such a place may reasonably die, and never rise to do him wrong, or any way impeach. What then he said, so he unsay it now.
Why, yet he doth deny his prisoners, but with proviso and exception, that we at our own charge shall ransom straight his brother-in-law, the foolish Mortimer, who on my soul hath wilfully betrayed the lives of those that he did lead to fight. Shall we buy treason and indent with fears when they have lost and forfeited themselves? I shall never hold that man my friend whose tongue shall ask me for one penny cost to ransom home revolted Mortimer.
Revolted Mortimer? He never did fall off my sovereign liege, but by the chance of war.
Thou dost belie him, Percy, thou dost belie him. Let me not hear you speak of Mortimer. Send me your prisoners with the speediest means, or you shall hear in such a kind from me as will displease you. Can no man tell me of my unthrifty son? 'Tis full 3 moons since I did see him last. If any plague hang over us, 'tis he.
My lord, some 2 days since I saw the prince.
And what said the gallant?
His answer was, he would unto the stews, and from the commonest creature pluck a glove, and wear it as a favor, and with that he would unhorse the lustiest challenger.
Where is the king?
What means our cousin that he stares and looks so wildly?
God save your grace. I do beseech your majesty to have some conference with your grace alone.
Withdraw yourselves, and leave us here alone.
Forever may my knees grow to the earth, my tongue cleave to my roof within my mouth, unless a pardon ere I rise or speak.
Intended or committed was this fault. If on the first, how heinous e'er it be, to win thy afterlove, I pardon thee.
Then give me leave that I may turn the key, that no man enter till my tale be done.
Have thy desire.
My liege, beware! Look to thyself. Thou hast a traitor in thy presence there.
Belen, I'll make thee safe.
Stay thy revengeful hand. Thou hast no cause to fear.
Open the door. Secure, foolhardy king. Shall I for love speak treason to thy face? Open the door, or I will break it open.
What is the matter, uncle? Speak.
Peruse this writing here, and thou shalt know the treason that my haste forbids me show.
Remember, as thou readst, thy promise passed. I do repent me. Read not my name there. My heart is not confederate with my hand. Thy overflow of good converts to bad, and thy abundant goodness shall excuse this deadly blot in thy digressing son.
So shall my virtue be his vice's bard, and he shall spend mine honor with his shame. Thou killst me in his life, giving him breath. The traitor lives, the true man's put to death.
And yet I shall pardon him, as God shall pardon me. Uncle, farewell, and cousin, adieu.
Come, my old son. I pray God make thee new.
And if the devil come and roar for them, I will not send them. I will after straight and tell him so, for I will ease my heart, albeit I make a hazard of my head.
What, drunk with choler? Stay and pause a while. Here comes your uncle.
Speak of Mortimer? Soon I will speak of him, and let my soul want mercy if I do not join with him. Yea, on his part, I'll empty all these veins and shed my dear blood drop by drop in the dust. But I will lift the downtrod Mortimer as high in the air as this unthankful king, as this ingrate and cankered Bolingbroke.
Brother, the king hath made your nephew mad.
Who struck this heat up after I was gone?
He will forsooth have all my prisoners. And when I urged the ransom once again of my wife's brother, then his cheek looked pale, and on my face he turned an eye of death, trembling even at the name of Mortimer.
I cannot blame him. Was not he proclaimed by Richard that dead is the next of blood?
He was. I heard of the proclamation. And then it was when the unhappy king, whose wrongs in us God pardon, did set forth upon his Irish expedition, from whence he intercepted did return to be deposed and shortly murdered.
But soft, I pray you. Did King Richard then proclaim my brother, Edmund Mortimer, heir to the crown?
He did. Myself did hear it.
Nay, then I cannot.
Peace, cousin. Say no more. And now I will unclasp a secret book. And to your quick-conceiving discontents, I'll read you matter deep and dangerous, as full of peril and as venturous spirit as to o'erwalk a current roaring loud on the unsteadfast footing of a spear.
If he fall in, good night, or sink or swim. Send danger from the east unto the west, so honor cross it from the north to south, and let them grapple. Oh, the blood more stirs to rouse a lion than to start a hare.
Imagination of some great exploit drives him beyond the bounds of patience.
By heaven, methinks it were an easy leap to pluck bright honor from the pale-faced moon.
He apprehends a world of figures here, but not the form of what he should attend. Good cousin, give me audience for a while.
I cry you mercy.
Those same noble Scots that are your prisoners.
I'll keep them all. By God, he shall not have a Scot of them. No, if a Scot would save his soul, he shall not. I'll keep them by this hand.
You start away and lend no ear unto my purposes. Those prisoners you shall keep.
Nay, that I will. That's flat. He said he would not ransom Mortimer. Forbade my tongue to speak of Mortimer. But I will find him when he lies asleep. And in his ear I'll holla Mortimer. Nay, I'll have a starling shall be taught to speak nothing but Mortimer and give it him, to keep his anger still in motion.
Hear you, cousin, a word.
All studies here I solemnly defy, save how to gall and pinch this Bolingbroke.
Farewell, kinsman. I'll talk to you when you are better tempered to attend.
I have done in faith.
Then once more to your Scottish prisoners. Deliver them up without their ransom straight, and make the Douglas son your only mean for powers in Scotland, which, for diverse reasons which I shall send you written, be assured will easily be granted.
I smell it. Upon my life, it will do well.
Before the game is afoot, still let's slip.
In faith, it is exceedingly well aimed.
Cousin, farewell. No further go in this than I by letters shall direct your course.
Farewell, good brother. We shall thrive, I trust.
Uncle, adieu. Oh, let the hours be short, till fields and blows and groans applaud our sport. How now, Kate? I must leave you within these 2 hours.
Oh, my good lord, why are you thus alone? For what offense have I this fortnight been a banished woman from my Harry's bed?
Tell me, sweet lord. What is it that takes from thee thy stomach, pleasure, and thy golden sleep? Why hast thou lost the fresh blood in thy cheeks, and given my treasures and my rights of thee to thick-eyed musing and cursed melancholy? In thy faint slumbers I by thee have watched, and heard thee murmur tales of iron wars. Speak terms of manage to thy bounding steed. Cry courage to the field.
And thou hast talked
of sallies and retires,
of trenches,
of
palisados,
frontiers,
parapets,
of basilisks,
of cannon and culverin,
of prisoners' ransom,
and of soldiers slain,
and all the currents of a heady fight.
Some heavy business hath my lord in hand,
and I must know it,
else he loves me not.
What ho! Is Williams with the packet gone?
He is, my lord, an hour ago.
Hath Butler brought those horses from the sheriff?
One horse, my lord, he brought even now.
That roan shall be my throne. Well, I will back him straight. Oh, Esperance! Bid Butler lead him forth into the park.
But hear you, my lord.
What sayst thou, my lady?
What is it carries you away?
Why, my horse, my love, my horse.
Out, you mad-headed ape. A weasel hath not such a deal of spleen as you are tossed with. In faith, I'll know your business, Harry, that I will.
I fear my brother Mortimer doth stir about his title, and hath sent for you to line his enterprise.
But if you go...
For a foot I shall be weary, love.
Come, you parakeeto, answer me directly unto this question that I ask.
In faith, I'll break thy little finger, Harry, and if thou wilt not tell me all things true.
Away! Away, you trifler! Love? I love thee not. I care not for thee, Kate. This is no world to play with mammets and to tilt with lips. We must have bloody noses and cracked crowns and pass them current, too. God's me, my horse! What sayst thou, Kate? What wouldst thou have with me?
Do you not love me?
Do you not indeed?
Well, do not then. For since you love me not, I will not love myself.
Do you not love me?
Nay, tell me if you speak in jest or no.
Come. Wilt thou see me ride? And when I am a horseback, I will swear I love thee infinitely. But hark you, Kate. I must not have you henceforth question me whither I go, nor reason whereabout. Whither I go, thither shall you go too. Today will I set forth, tomorrow you. Will this content you, Kate?
It must of force.
There lives not three good men unhanged in England, and one of them is fat and grows old. God help the while.
How now, wolf sack? What mutter you?
Ah, king's son. If I do not beat thee out of thy kingdom with a dagger of lath, and drive all thy subjects afore thee like a flock of wild geese, I'll never wear hair on my face more, you Prince of Wales.
Why, you horse unround man, what's the matter?
What's the matter? There be four of us here have taken £1,000 this day morning.
Where is it, Jack? Where is it?
Where is it? Taken from us it is. 100 upon four of us.
What, 100 men?
I am a rogue if I were not at half sword with a dozen of them 2 hours together. I've never dealt better since I was a man.
What, fought you with them all?
All? I know not what you call all, but if I fought not with 50 of them, I'm a bunch of radish. If there were not 2 or 3 and 50 upon poor old Jack, then I am no two-legged creature.
Pray God you have not murdered some of them.
Nay, that's past praying for. I have peppered 2 of them. 2 I am sure I have paid. 2 rogues in buckram suits. I tell thee what, Hal. If I tell thee a lie, spit in my face. Call me a horse. Thou knowest my old word. Here I lay, and thus I bore my point. 4 rogues in buckram let drive at
what?
Me.
What? 4? Thou saidst but 2 even now.
4, Hal. I told thee 4.
Aye, he said 4.
These 4 came all afront and mainly thrust at me. I made me no more ado, but took all their 7 points in my target thus.
7? Why, there were but 4 even now.
In buckram?
Aye, 4 in buckram suits.
7 by these hilts, or I am a villain else. Dost thou hear me, Hal?
Aye, and mark thee too, Jack.
Do so, for it is worth the listening to. These 9 in buckram that I told thee of began to give me ground, but I followed me close, came in foot and hand, and with a thought 7 of the 11 I paid. But as the devil would have it, 3 misbegotten knaves in Kendall Green came at my back and let drive at me. For it was so dark, Hal, that thou couldst not see thy hands.
These lies are like their father that begets them. Gross as a mountain, open, palpable. Why, thou clay-brained gut, thou naughty-fated fool, thou whoreson, obscene, greasy, tallow-cat.
What, art thou mad? Art thou mad? Is not the truth the truth?
Why, how couldst thou know these men in Kendall Green when it was so dark thou couldst not see thy hat? Come, tell us your reason. What sayest thou to this? We too saw you 4 set on 4 and bound them, and were masters of their wealth. Mark now how a plain tale shall put you down. Then did we too set on you 4, and with a word outface you from your prize, and have it, yea, and can show it you here in the house. And Falstaff, you carried your guts away as nimbly, with as quick dexterity, and roared for mercy, and still run and roared as ever I heard Falcat. What a slave art thou, to hack thy sword as thou hast done, and then say it was in fight. What good fight? What starting hole canst thou now find out to hide thee from this open and apparent shame?
Come, let's hear, Jack. What trick hast thou now?
By the Lord, I knew ye as well as he that made you. Why, hear you, my masters, was it for me to kill the heir apparent?
Content, and the argument shall be thy running away.
Ah, no more of that, Hal, and thou lovest me.
My lord the prince.
How now, my lady the hostess? What sayest thou to me?
There's villainous news abroad. Here was Sir John Bracy from your father. You must to the court in the morning. That same mad fellow of the north, Percy, has risen up in arms against your father, the king.
What letters hast thou there? I can but thank you.
These letters come from your father.
Letters from him? Why comes he not himself?
He cannot come, my lord. He is grievous sick.
Zounds! How has he the leisure to be sick in such a jostling time? Who leads his tower? Under whose government come they along?
His letters bear his mind, not I, my lord.
Sick now? Droop now? This sickness doth infect the very lifeblood of our enterprise. Yet doth he give us bold advertisement that with our small conjunction we should on to see how fortune is disposed to us. For as he writes, there is no quailing now because the king is certainly possessed of all our purposes. What say you to it?
Your father's sickness is a maim to us.
A perilous gash, a very limb lopped off. And yet, In faith, it is not. His present want seems more than we shall find it. Were it good to set the exact wealth of all our states all at one cast? To set so rich a main on the nice hazard of one doubtful hour?
But yet I would your father had been here. The quality and hair of our attempt brooks no division. It will be thought by some that, know not why he is away, that wisdom, loyalty, and mere dislike of our proceedings kept the Earl from hence.
You strain too far. I rather of his absence make this use. It lends a luster and more great opinion, a larger dare to our great enterprise, than if the Earl were here, for men must think, if we, without his help, can make a head to push against the kingdom, with his help we shall overturn a topsy-turvy down. Come, let us take a muster speedily. Doomsday is near. Die all, die merrily.
Talk not of dying. I am out of fear of death or death's hand for this one half year.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son?
Lords, give us leave. The Prince of Wales and I must have some private conference. I know not whether God will have it so, for some displeasing service I have done, that in his secret doom out of my blood he'll breed revengement and a scourge for me. But thou dost, in thy passages of life, make me believe that thou art only marked for the hot vengeance and the rod of heaven to punish my mistreadings. Tell me else, could such inordinate and low desires, such poor, such bare, such lewd, such mean attempts, such barren pleasures, rude society as thou art matched withal and grafted to, accompany the greatness of thy blood, and hold their level with thy princely heart?
So please your majesty, I would I could quit all offenses with as clear excuse, as well I am doubtless I can purge myself of many I am charged withal.
God pardon thee. Let me wonder, Harry, at thy affections, which do hold a wing quite from the flight of all thy ancestors. As thou art, to this hour was Richard then, when I from France set foot at Ravensburg. And even as I was then, is Percy now. Now, by my scepter and by my soul to boot, he hath more worthy interest to the state than thou the shadow of succession. But wherefore do I tell these news to thee? Why, Harry, do I tell thee of my foes, which art my nearest and dearest enemy? Thou art like enough, though through vassal fear, base inclination, and the start of spleen, to fight against me under Percy's pay, to dog his heels and curtsy at his frowns, to show how much thou art degenerate.
Do not think so. You shall not find it so. And God forgive them that have so much swayed your majesty's good thoughts away from me. I will redeem all this on Percy's head, and in the closing of some glorious day be bold to tell you that I am your son, when I will wear a garment all of blood, which, washed away, shall scour my shame with it. And that shall be the day, whenever it lights, that this same child of honor and renown, this gallant Hotspur, this all-praise knight, and your unthought-of Harry chance to meet. For the time will come that I shall make this northern youth exchange his glorious deeds for my indignities. Percy is but my factor, good my lord, to engross up glorious deeds on my behalf. And I will call him to so strict account that he shall render every glory up.
100,000 rebels die in this. Thou shalt have charge and sovereign trust herein. Our general forces at Bridge North shall meet. Our hands are full of business. Let's away. Advantage feeds him fat while men delay. How now, my lord of Worcester? 'Tis not well that you and I should meet upon such terms as we now meet. You have deceived our trust, and made us doff our easy robes of peace to crush our old limbs in ungentle steel.
Hear me, my liege.
For mine own part, I could be well content to entertain the lag end of my life with quiet hours. For I protest I have not sought the day of this dislike.
You have not sought it? How comes it, then?
Rebellion lay in his way, and he found it.
Peace through at peace.
It pleased your majesty to turn your looks of favor from myself and all our house. And yet I must remember you, my lord. We were the first and dearest of your friends. It was myself, my brother, and his son that brought you home, and boldly did out dare the dangers of the time. You swore to us, and you did swear that oath at Doncaster, that you did nothing purpose gainst the state, nor claim no further than your new fallen right, the seat of Gaunt, dukedom of Lancaster. To this we swore our aid. But in short space, it rained down fortune showering on your head, and such a flood of greatness fell on you, what with our help, what with the absent king, what with the injuries of a wanton time, the seeming sufferances that you had borne, and the contrarious winds that held the king so long in his unlucky Irish wars, that all in England did repute him dead. And from this swarm of fair advantages, you took occasion to be quickly wooed, to grip the general sway into your hand, forgot your oath to us at Doncaster.
These things indeed you have articulate proclaimed at market crosses, read in churches, and never yet did insurrection want such watercolors to impaint its cause.
In both your armies there is many a soul shall pay full dearly for this encounter if once they join in trial. Tell your nephew, the Prince of Wales doth join with all the world in praise of Henry Percy. For my part, I may speak it to my shame. I have a truant been to chivalry, and so I hear he doth account me too. Yet this before my father's majesty. I am content that he shall take the odds of his great name and estimation, and will, to save the blood on either side, try fortune with him in a single fight.
And, Prince of Wales, so dare we venture thee, albeit considerations infinite do make against it. No. Good Worcester, no. We love our people well. Even those we love that are misled upon your cousin's part. And will they take the offer of our grace, both he and they and you, yea, every man shall be my friend again, and I'll be his. So tell your cousin, and bring me word what he will do. But if he will not yield, rebuke and dread correction wait on us, and they shall do their office. So be gone. We offer fair. Take it advisedly.
It will not be accepted on my life. The Douglas and the Hotspur both together are confident against the world in arms.
Hence, therefore, every leader to his charge, for on their answer we will set on them. And God befriend us as our cause is just.
I would 'twere bedtime, Hal, and all well.
Why, thou owest God a death.
'Tis not due yet. I would be loath to pay him before his day.
Oh no, my nephew must not know, Sir Douglas, the liberal and kind offer of the king. It is not possible, it cannot be, for treason is but trusted like the fox, who never so tame, so cherished and locked up, will have a wild trick of his ancestors. Look how we can, or sad, or merrily. Interpretation will misquote our looks.
Deliver what you will, I'll say 'tis so. Here comes your cousin.
My uncle is returned. Deliver up my lord of Westmoreland. Uncle, what news?
The king will bid you battle presently.
Defy him by the Lord of Westmoreland.
Lord Douglas, go you and tell him so.
Marry, and shall, and very willingly.
There is no seeming mercy in the king.
Did you beg any? God forbid.
I told him gently of our grievances, of his oath-breaking, which he mended thus, by now forswearing that he is forsworn. He calls us rebels, traitors, and will scourge with hearty arms this hateful name in us.
Arms, gentlemen, to arms. For I have thrown a brave defiance in King Henry's teeth, and Westmoreland that was engaged did bear it, which cannot choose but bring him quickly on.
The Prince of Wales stepped forth before the king, and nephew challenged you to single fight.
Oh, would the quarrel lay upon our heads, and that no man might draw short breath today but I and Harry Monmouth. Tell me, how showed his tasking? Seemed it in contempt?
No, by my soul. I never in my life did hear a challenge urged more modestly, unless a brother should a brother dare to gentle exercise and proof of arms.
Never did I hear of any prince so wild a liberty. But be he as he will, yet once ere night I will embrace him with a soldier's arm, that he shall shrink under my courtesy. Arm with speed. And fellows, soldiers, friends, better consider what you have to do than I, that have not well the gift of tongue, can lift your blood up with persuasion.
I would deny my name.
My name is Harry Percy.
Why, then I see a very valiant rebel of the name. I am the Prince of Wales, and think not Percy to share with me in glory any more. Two stars keep not their motion in one sphere, nor can one England brook a double reign of Harry Percy and the Prince of Wales.
Nor shall it, Harry, for the hour is come to end the one of us. And would to God thy name and arms were now as great as mine.
I'll make it greater ere I part from thee, and all the budding honors of thy crest I'll crop to make a garland for my head.
I can no longer brook thy vanities. Robbed of me my youth. I better brook the loss of brittle life than those proud titles thou hast won of me. They wound my thoughts worse than thy sword my flesh. But thoughts, the slaves of life, and life, time's fool, and time that takes survey of all the world, must have a stop. Oh, I could prophesy but that the earth and cold hand of death lies on my tongue. No, Percy. Thou art dust and food for...
For worms, brave Percy. Fare thee well, great heart. Ill-weaved ambition, how much art thou shrunk. When that this body did contain a spirit, a kingdom for it was too small a bound. But now 2 paces of the vilest earth is room enough. Adieu. And take thy praise with thee to heaven.
Health to my sovereign, and new happiness added to that I am to deliver. There is not now a rebel sword unsheathed, but peace puts forth her olive everywhere. The manner how this action hath been borne, here at more leisure may your highness read, with every course in his particular.
O Westmoreland, thou art a summer bird, which ever in the haunch of winter sings the lifting up of day. And wherefore should this good news make me sick? Will fortune never come with both hands full, but write her fair words still in foulest letters? She either gives a stomach and no food, such are the poor in health, or else a feast and takes away the stomach, such are the rich that have abundance and enjoy it not. I should rejoice now at this happy news. And now my sight fails, and my brain is giddy. Help me. Come near me. Now I am much ill.
Comfort your majesty.
My sovereign lord, cheer up yourself. Look up.
Be patient, princess. You do know these fits are with his highness very ordinary. Stand from him. Give him air. He'll straight be well.
No, he cannot long hold out these pangs. The incessant care and labor of his mind hath wrought the mure that should confine it in, so thin that life looks through and will break out.
Speak lower, princess, for the king recovers.
This apoplexy will certain be his end.
I pray you, take me up and bear me hence into some other chamber. Softly.
How now, Mistress Doll?
Sick of a calm, yea, good faith.
So is all her sect. And they once be in a calm, they are sick.
Pox, damn you, you muddy rascal. Is that all the comfort you give me?
By my troth, this is the old fashion. You two never meet, but you fall to some discord. You are both, in good truth, as romantic as 2 dry toasts. You cannot one bear with another's confirmities. What the good year, one must bear, and that must be you.
You are the weaker vessel, as they say, the emptier vessel.
Can a weak, empty vessel bear such a huge, full hog's head? There's a whole merchant's venture of Bordeaux stuff in him. You have not seen a hulk better stuffed in the hold. Come, I'll be friends with thee, Jack. Thou art going to the wars, and whether I shall ever see thee again or no, there's nobody cares.
Kiss me, doll.
By my troth, I kiss thee with the most constant heart.
I am old, I am old.
I love thee better than I love e'er a scurvy young boy of them all.
What stuff wilt have a kirtle of? I shall receive money a Thursday, shall have a cap tomorrow. A merry song, come. It grows late, we'll to bed. Thou'lt forget me when I'm gone.
By my troth, thou'lt set me a-weeping, and thou sayest so.
Sir, ancient coins below, and would speak with you.
Hang him, swaggering rascal. Let him not come hither. It is the foul-mouthest rogue in England.
Sir John, God save you.
What wind blew you hither, Poins?
Not the ill wind which blows no man to good. Sweet knight, thou art now one of the greatest men in this realm. Sir John, thy tender lambkin now is king. Harry the Fifth's the man, if I speak the truth. When Poins lies, do this, and fig me like the bragging Spaniard.
What, is the old king dead?
As nail in door, the things I speak are just.
Away, doll! Saddle my horse. Master Poins, choose what office thou wilt in the land. 'Tis thine.
Oh, joyful day. I would not take a lady's dowry for my fortune.
What? Do I bring good news?
I am fortune's steward. Get on thy boots. We'll ride all night. Oh, sweet Poins. Away, doll! Come, utter more to me, and withal, devise something to do thyself good. Let us take any man's horses. The laws of England are at my commandment. Blessed are they that have been my friends, and woe to the Lord Chief Justice.
Good morrow, and God save your majesty.
This new and gorgeous garment, majesty, sits not so easy on me as you think. Brothers, you mix your sadness with some fear. This is the English, not the Turkish court. Not Amurath, and Amurath succeeds, but Harry, Harry. Yet be sad, good brothers, for by my faith it very well becomes you. Sorrow so royally in you appears that I will deeply put the fashion on and wear it in my heart. Why then be sad? But entertain no more of it, good brothers, than a joint burden laid upon us all. For me, by heaven, I bid you be assured, I'll be your father and your brother too. Let me but hear your love, I'll bear your cares. Yet weep that Harry's dead, and so will I. But Harry lives, that shall convert those tears by number into hours of happiness.
We hope no otherwise from your majesty.
My father is gone wild into his grave, for in his tomb lie my affections, and with his spirit sadly I survive, to mock the expectation of the world, to frustrate prophecies, and to raise out rotten opinion, who hath writ me down after my seeming. The tide of blood in me hath proudly flowed in vanity till now. Now doth it turn and ebb back to the sea, where it shall mingle with the state of floods and flow henceforth in former majesty. Now call we our high court of parliament, and let us choose such limbs of noble counsel that the great body of our state may go in equal rank with the best governed nation, that war, or peace, or both at once, may be as things acquainted and familiar to us, in which you, father, shall have foremost hand. Our coronation done, we will accite, as I before remembered, all our state, and God consigning to my intents, no prince nor peer shall have just cause to say God shorten Harry's happy life one day.
More rushes, more rushes!
The trumpets have sounded twice.
'Twill be 2 o'clock ere they come from the coronation. Dispatch, dispatch!
Stand here by me, Master Poins. I will make the king do you grace. I will leer upon him as he comes by and do but mark the countenance that he will give me.
God bless thy lungs, good knight.
Come here, Poyne, stand beside me. Oh, if I had had time to have made new liveries, I would have bestowed the 1,000 pound I borrowed of you. But 'tis no matter, this poor show doth better. This doth infer the zeal I had to see him.
It doth so.
It shows my earnestness of affection.
It doth so.
My devotion.
It doth, it doth, it doth.
As it were to ride day and night, and not to deliberate, not to remember, not to have patience to shift me.
It is best, sir.
But to stand stained with travel and sweating with the desire to see him, thinking of nothing else, putting all affairs else into oblivion, as if there were nothing else to be done but to see him.
His semper idem for obsque hoc nihile is all in every part. There roared the sea, and trumpet clangor sounds.
God save thy grace, King Hal, my royal Hal. The heavens thee guard and keep, most royal imp of fame. God save thee, my sweet boy.
My Lord Chief Justice, speak to that vain man.
Have you your wits? Know you what 'tis you speak?
My king, my Jove, I speak to thee, my heart.
How ill white hairs become a fool and a jester. I have long dreamt of such a kind of man, so surfeit swollen, so old, and so profane. But being waked, I do despise my dream. Fall to thy prayers, old man. I know thee not.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
You've been listening to the concluding episode of Within the Hollow Crown, a sad story of the death of kings, an adaptation of William Shakespeare's Richard II and Henry IV, parts 1 and 2. Within the Hollow Crown was adapted for radio and produced by Dan O'Donnell and directed by Ralph Janikas. The voice coach was Ellen Gould and production assistant Mary Feely. Appearing in the cast were Carl Alexander, Nick Bolden, Dave Burgess, Christina Fleury, John Houston, Ralph Jacinus, Paul McCulloch, and Dan Zukovic. Music for the bar scenes was recorded by Joe Mulrooney, Tony McKinnon, Marco Mancini, and Ralph Gitt. I'm Ron Lavoie.